Support for the Something Wild podcast comes, as always, from you, our listeners and subscribers, and from Prescott Farm Environmental Education Center, exploring and preserving the natural world one adventure at a time. Open year-round with public programs, trails and natural playscape, vacation camps, and fledglings nature-based preschool. PrescottFarm.org.
I'm Chris Martin from New Hampshire Audubon, and this is Something Wild. We often think of the food chain in the natural world in linear terms. This eats that, and in turn, is eaten by another. But today's subject proves the chain is a little more like a web. But some of the species we're talking about today feed on, well, they feed on us. We're talking about mosquitoes. They're fascinating, and there's a lot about them most folks don't know. And here to help us sort out all this is Sarah McGregor. She's an entomologist and founder of Dragon Mosquito Control. Thanks for being here, Sarah.
Thanks for having me.
So we often think about mosquitoes like with a capital M, like there's just one mosquito, but there's actually lots of different species. Isn't that correct?
Right. We have over 45 species in our state. Most people think of maybe two mosquitoes, the brown ones and the black ones, or the striped ones and the brown ones, but there's quite a few different species with different habits and different habitats.
Wow. I never even looked at the colors. Brown and black.
Some people, maybe because they've heard me talk about them, look for the striped legs now. So you have mosquitoes with striped legs and those with brown legs. So that's maybe the extent of identification the average homeowner might even try.
We all lump them together as mosquitoes, but do some of them have common names or names that you refer to them by?
They do. There are the house mosquito, so they fly into your house. We have the salt marsh mosquitoes, the summer and the spring salt marsh mosquitoes.
And those are different species. That's not just describing where they live.
Right. Completely different species.
Wow.
Tree hole mosquitoes, rock pool mosquitoes, cattail mosquitoes.
One thing I noticed, and actually this is one of the things that got us on this topic to begin with, is I know when the snow thaws in the spring, oftentimes there's these giant, slow-moving 747 kind of mosquitoes that are like gliding around slowly around me. And then in September, when I go out to the lake to go camping, the mosquitoes are tiny little darts that like move so fast and are so small you can barely even see them, and they bite you before you even know they're coming. Those are not the same species, right? Those are totally different animals.
No, some species will buzz around you for a while looking for a place to land before they land and suck blood. Other mosquitoes, the salt marsh mosquito flies in and bites. They don't buzz around you. You don't have a chance because they're so fast. Yeah. And they literally will chase you. So if you're running from your car to the house, they're chasing you to the house.
So the question on size, my observation is that early season, you see bigger mosquitoes than you see in the fall. Is that wrong?
We do see different sizes, but there are big mosquitoes in the summer. And there is a factor there of food source. So if there's too much competition, you're going to have a smaller mosquito.
So mosquitoes that have lots of food grow bigger? Or
right.
If the population is dense, they compete?
Right.
And they don't grow bigger?
Right. There can even be variations within the same species of size. But that's something that most people wouldn't notice unless they're looking at them under the microscope for 40 hours a week like I do.
Okay, so mosquitoes have multiple stages in their lives, right? Can you describe a little of that?
Right. And that's what's so interesting about insects. Mosquitoes start their life stage off, well, first as an egg, and then they're in the water. So they live in water, stagnant water, shallow stagnant water.
The eggs are in the water.
The eggs are washed into the water once the snow and ice melt, or after a rainfall, or a tide if they're on the salt marsh. And then they spend anywhere from a week or longer if it's cold in the water. And then they pupate, go into a stage where they're becoming an adult, and then they come out of the water as a winged adult mosquito.
When they're larvae in the water, are they eating?
Yes, they're filter feeding.
Filter feeding.
So they're down
low in the food web.
Yeah, right.
Eating microorganisms that are in the water.
Whatever's pulling in with their brushes on their heads.
Wow.
They're just pulling in water, so that anything's going in there, which is part of how we've learned to control them.
Wow. Do all mosquitoes need a blood meal somewhere in their life cycle?
No. Well, only females bite.
Only females.
She's looking for blood to nourish the eggs. She will also eat plant nectars. And as the male, that's all he does is eat sugar. Mm-hmm. But females can lay eggs without a blood meal. They just can't lay as many eggs.
So the drive to bite a warm-blooded animal comes only during the stage where they're laying eggs?
Well, they may not be looking for a warm-blooded animal.
Okay.
There are mosquitoes that will bite amphibians, fish. So there's quite
fish.
A variety.
How do they do that?
Quickly, I believe.
So mosquitoes have adapted different strategies depending on species, I assume.
Right.
Were they amphibians? Are there snakes, reptile biting?
Yep.
Mammals, mm-hmm. and birds,
right.
also.
So there are mosquitoes that will specifically bite birds and nothing else. And then there are mosquitoes that will bite birds and humans, or deer and birds and humans. Those tend to be the ones that carry diseases because they're, because they're picking up a disease from a bird and then biting us. And then there are the mosquitoes that prefer to bite turtles or snakes. So it's very specialized.
Okay, so an individual female mosquito who's getting ready to develop and lay eggs. One blood meal only or multiple bites? Do they bite multiple times?
That is species dependent too.
Oh.
Some mosquitoes will just take one long blood meal and others will hop around and bite multiple times.
So when you study mosquitoes in the course of your business, do you... What do you do when you are assessing whether there are mosquitoes in a certain area?
We sample the water. Well, we start out by just observing the habitat because you can see a lot without disturbing the water. Once you disturb the water, the mosquitoes will go down to the bottom and hide.
They're smart.
But we dip the water and count, keep track of the count. And we bring mosquito larvae back to our lab, and we can identify the species or rear them into adulthood. Uh-huh. And we also trap adult mosquitoes throughout the state. And I look at every single mosquito we catch under a microscope and decide what species it is, and then sort them and prepare them for disease testing at the state lab.
Tell me a little about the variety of habitats that these different mosquito species can be in. Salt water, fresh water, running water,
Not running water.
No.
They can be on the sides of sluggish streams where it may be stagnant, but mosquitoes have no way to swim, so they need stagnant water. So salt marshes, snowmelt pools, vernal pools, ponds, man-made containers such as catch basins,
Bird baths,
clogged rain gutters, wheelbarrows, your boat, your canoe, the tarp on your wood pile.
Oh, my gosh.
The dog bowl, the little foot bath you keep in front of your swimming pool.
So you're saying
abandoned swimming pools.
Patches of standing water as small as a football?
A footprint. Cow print.
How about literally, do they ever breed in... like bear footprints or something like
that? They will breed in a footprint.
A moose footprint?
Technically, they could, right?
Wow.
Tire tracks are a popular one.
Wow.
So if you rut up your yard in the spring, there could be mosquito eggs there that will hatch in the...
So what's fascinating to me about that is the lengths to which different animals can go to capitalize on specialized habitat through the course of evolution.
I think that's what's so fascinating about mosquitoes is they've pretty much adapted to most habitats, to the harshest salt environment, to the most polluted environment.
And those are different species. That
completely different species. Yeah. One of the nastiest catch basins that I dipped, it was here in Concord, was full of cigarette butts, and it was loaded with mosquito larvae. So they're happy to live in a nasty, polluted environment like that. The rock pool mosquito, first time I saw them was in Rye, and we've since collected them adults in Salem, but they will lay their eggs in a depression in a rock that collects rainwater.
So what happens if a mosquito lays its eggs in a pool and then the pool dries up?
The eggs can lay dormant for years.
Years?
Years.
Any idea how many?
I've heard up to 8.
How is that possible?
They're amazing creatures. They're amazing. But the other thing that can happen is the eggs have popped, as we like to say, and the larvae are in that water, but then that water dries up and that will kill the larvae.
Right. So it's only when they're in a little self-contained egg still and haven't developed that that would work. Once
right.
the larvae are out, they're subject
they need
to drying
the water.
Out.
They need the water.
Any really cool mosquito names that you're, I mean, I assume it's Latin names, but any good ones?
Cochlotidia perturbans is a mouthful, and it's aptly named because it's a very perturbing mosquito.
In what way?
Flies into your house will be the mosquito that you hear at night when you go to bed.
Yeah.
Uritania saffarina is a mosquito with beautiful sapphire scales that look like jewels, so it's quite aptly named. Another mosquito that is quite common in New Hampshire, the species name is excrutions, and it has a very painful bite because there are mosquitoes that you won't feel biting you. Aedes cinereus is an ankle biter, and you don't even realize she's biting you. Then you get in the house and you start scratching. But excrutions, it hurts. You'll feel her biting.
You know, I'm a naturalist and trained biologist too, but spent almost no time learning about insects in general, and certainly no time studying mosquitoes. So,
everyone has an opinion about mosquitoes.
Yeah, such as?
Well, most people hate them.
Yeah.
Or fear them with diseases. But we live with so many insects in our world that maybe you don't pay attention to. But everybody pays attention to mosquitoes because they drive you into the house at night. They've spoiled the barbecue or the pool party.
Well, the good thing from my point of view is that they don't like low humidity. And so, at least that's my understanding, you can count on the middle of the day mostly being mosquito-free, at least in terms of them swarming around.
There are two species, well, actually more than two, but two very common species, one here in Concord that breeds on the floodplains, Styxicus, and the salt marsh mosquito, Solicitans, that is active in the sun. So it's quite surprising to people that maybe they're not familiar with this, either of these mosquitoes, that they get out of their car, they're standing on the lawn at noon in the sun, and they're being attacked by mosquitoes.
Well, let's talk about mosquitoes in one other way. If we have time, let's talk about them in one other way, and that is mosquitoes as food for other animals. There's a lot of mosquito biomass in New Hampshire or any place else, and that's food for our insectivorous birds, probably for some amphibians.
Right.
They're an important piece of our food web.
Fish,
yeah, absolutely.
Fish eat a lot of
eating
mosquito.
Larvae as well as maybe if one lands on the surface.
Right. I have a pond and I watch my bass jump out of the pond trying to catch the mosquitoes.
That's a talent.
But, yeah, birds, salamanders, all sorts of animals.
Yeah, so they do play an important role in our ecosystem. I wonder how most of the folks that we invite on the show come in here to learn about the wonders of these animals, and you've just told me some things about them. But you're also in the business of controlling the populations. How did you get to that?
Well, I started studying insects, loved learning about this strange world of bugs that is right under us, and then started working in the salt marshes because I loved the environment, loved being outdoors, loved helping people, and never really thought about the idea of killing these things, mm-hmm. but that's what we were doing. But there's no shortage of mosquitoes, and we're not here to wipe them out. That's not even practical, and I don't think you'll find an entomologist that uses the word eradication.
Right. But you're also monitoring them. I mean, right, as part of your work, you're monitoring what the populations are, where they are.
That is a very large part of what we do, is surveying and surveillance of the mosquito population and for me, that's what's so interesting about them, is watching their dynamic. They're looking at the variety of habitats and habits and being able to identify these species that are really beautiful under the microscope.
Absolutely.
Whether they have silvery scales or what look like blonde bangs between their eyes, or the Eurotania saffronina with their beautiful blue scales.
And so mosquitoes are just one more example of the incredible variety of insects in general, which are it's oftentimes unappreciated or underappreciated because they are, so to speak, below our radar sometimes.
Yeah, they either scare people or they bite people or sting people. They don't, and people aren't thinking about the, you know, the benign insects. They talk about the ladybugs that come into your house or the seed cone bugs.
Mm-hmm,
but
mm-hmm.
There's a lot more to insects than just who they bite and sting.
I wanted to ask about how mosquitoes find their meals. Are they going by sight or smell or heat signature or infrared? What do they use to find
yes.
their meal? All those?
They use color. They use metabolites. They can sense metabolites that we're giving off, carbon dioxide that we're exhaling.
Wow.
And sometimes it's, you know, you're crossing paths. You just happen to be in their habitat.
So sometimes it's random, but they can zero in based on various things. Do they assess, like, if you and I were standing there in the swamp together, they'd say, that one's a better meal than this one? Do they do that? Some people more attractive to mosquitoes than others?
Some people are more attractive.
And how?
It can be the metabolites your body's giving off. It could be scents that you've put on your body. You may have a higher rate of respiration. So if you're a smelly person with lots of hairspray or perfumes or soaps and...
Mosquitoes like that sort of thing?
Some do.
Aside from DEET and other manufactured chemicals, any home remedies that you think are effective?
Nothing compares to the DEET, really. And I always stress that during the disease part of the season, you don't want to take a chance if there's a mosquito out there carrying disease in your community that you're not repelling it. And maybe that's another little sidebar here, is that the mosquitoes in the spring are annoying, but they're not carrying diseases. It's the mosquitoes that are coming out in July, August, September, October that are the disease threat.
Is that because of the species that they are, or something else, a function of climate or something like that?
It's a time factor where the disease has amplified in the environment, and now it's spilling over into the human population. So it's in the birds, and it's building and building.
And then when we have frost, it knocks it back.
A hard freeze, not a frost, because you may know you see the frost in the field, but there's nothing up close to your house, and those mosquitoes are hiding in the bushes. A hard freeze where it stays below 32 for many hours in the evening.
Sarah McGregor is an entomologist and founder of Dragon Mosquito Control in Stratum. It's been great to talk to you, Sarah. I really appreciate it.
Thank you. Thank you for having me.
You're welcome. I'm Chris Martin. Our producer is Andrew Perella. Something Wild is a joint production of New Hampshire Audubon, the Society for the Protection of New Hampshire Forests, and NHPR.
NHPR's Leadership Circle is a community of listeners who place a high value on intelligent and independent radio. I'm Sarah Alger, Director of Major Gifts at NHPR. As a Leadership Circle sustaining member, your $100 a month investment helps NHPR create and deliver the award-winning news you trust and the outstanding programs you love. If you've been looking to deepen your commitment to the station that's an essential part of your life and your community, join us at nhpr.org/leadershipcircle.